Blog Talk Radio.
Are you in love, ignoring many red warning flags, hoping and believing that you will be the one to change him or her? 1 in 4 women will be a victim of domestic abuse or violence. Don't be one of them if you can help it. Stay tuned. Welcome to the Healthy Baby Boomers Network Blog Talk Radio Show. I'm your host, Dr. Erica Goodstone, licensed mental health counselor, healing through love relationship healer, somatic body psychotherapist, and health and wellness coach, helping men and women heal their bodies and their relationships through love. Author of the Love Me, Touch Me, Heal Me book series, the romantic novel Love in the Blizzard of Life, and the creator of the 30 Powerful Love Lessons for Your Soul. This show is all about living your dreams, fulfilling your life purpose, and creating and sustaining love and health and total well-being for the rest of your life, no matter what age you are right now. In every episode, I speak with vibrant, exciting, and positive men and women who just keep proving that life can and often does get better and better as we reach our 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, and beyond. Susan Sparks is a soda S-O-D-A, a survivor of domestic abuse. She has formed the Soda Fund, a charity to help victims of domestic abuse. Her book, Sparks in Love, is a survivor's story taking you behind closed doors to reveal what really happens when you fall in love with the wrong person and ignore the warning signs. Her story evolves from being an investigative journalist, then executive manager in the tech industry at age 24, and then becoming a full-time mom. So I'm delighted to welcome you today, and I look forward to hearing more of your story. Welcome, Susan Sparks.
Thank you so much, and thanks for having me on your show today.
So let's begin with your incredible background, your education, training, and the kind of work that you did, and then becoming a mom. Like, what was all that like, and what led to finally writing this book?
Sure. I think, you know, what's kind of a standout about my story and what shouldn't be a standout at the same time is that I, like so many people out there, I came from a very loving home growing up where my parents had a wonderful marriage. And I am educated, and I am a broadcast journalist, had my own television show in college, and I graduated school with honors. And I went on and had a fantastic career and looked like everyone else out there in the world. Didn't look like anyone. I wouldn't stand out in a crowd as anyone different. And so far as my upbringing, I didn't come from a broken home. Oftentimes they say, you come from abuse, you go to abuse. I really wasn't that person. I was a young girl who had everything going for me, and yet somehow I stepped into abuse.
So how did that happen? Well, there's so much. I want to ask some other questions first. You cite some startling statistics about domestic violence, number of female victims, and how these numbers compare with the serious illnesses that occur. So share a little bit of that.
Sure. I think the most startling one is 50% of women in our lifetimes will experience psychological aggression from an intimate partner. So before we even become victims of domestic abuse, which can then escalate to victims of domestic violence, we are already experiencing psychological aggression. And I think that's something that you, viewers and anyone listening can just become aware of. That's a great red flag to look out for. If someone is scaring you in a relationship, that's a really good warning sign to stop and take a pause and say, this may be going somewhere that I don't want it to go. I didn't catch that soon enough.
Wow. So, and what other signs of aggression besides making you frightened?
So I always say there's three things, because there's 15 warning signs of domestic abuse, and there are a lot of different, I mean, I could go through all 15 of them, but when you really want to just absorb what am I looking for, I boil it down to three, and they show up early in a relationship. I say fear and intimidation and control. If you're afraid of the person that you're with, if they're intimidating you in any way to change your behavior or modify the way that you would normally act. And then the control issue is a big one, because we really should always have the ability to make our own choices and our own decisions. And control is huge with abusers, because if they're controlling who you see or when you go out or how you're acting on social media or trying to tell you what to wear or where to work. These are all signs that if you're not making your own decisions or don't feel comfortable making your own decisions, something's going wrong.
Mm. So why is this happening so much at this point?
That's such a great question. And I think it's an interesting one to kind of dissect, because what we're really doing out in the world is we're being people, right? And we're meeting people and we're falling in love.
Mm-hmm.
And we're not different from anyone else. And as we're falling in love, abusers don't show their cards, their tricks, their behaviors. They don't show those behaviors to us up front. If they showed that to us up front, you know, on a first date or a second date, why would we go out with them on another date? They are masterful at hiding these behaviors and kind of grooming us, as people like to say, and kind of suppressing these behaviors until they see us start to fall in love. And then once we fall in love and they feel like, okay, you know, we kind of have them now, then they start to slowly show us who they are. Anyone out there has ever been in love, and I would guess that, you know, most of us have at this point, you know, just in a healthy relationship that sometimes goes bad, it's really hard to walk away from love, right?
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
So walking away from abusive love is a whole other story. And I think that's why it's so prevalent.
So women, I guess it happens with men also, but people have a difficult time even leaving these relationships. And why is that, even though I understand?
Sure, it's incredibly difficult. And I think it is important to say it happens to women and men, because people often say to me, you know, you say women and women. I try so hard not to be gender biased, because it does happen to women and to men. And everyone deserves to be in a safe place or a healthy relationship. No one deserves to be a victim of abuse in any form. You know, regardless of gender, it has nothing to do with gender. If you're a victim of abuse, you need to get out safely. And to answer your question, I think the reason that it's so difficult to leave is not only for the fact that we're in love with this person, but so oftentimes we are threatened with our lives if we leave, that they'll find us, they will kill us. They will take our children away. They'll harm our pets or keep our pets or destroy our property. If you look at the legal process in so many of the states across our country, it can be not only overwhelming but very intimidating to go into a court system and try and get orders of protection. And you start to walk through mm-hmm. that process and the courts don't necessarily understand or support you. There's a lot of work to be done to better support our victims and help them get out safely.
Wow. So at what point in your life and your career did you meet your husband, and what was he like at the beginning?
So I met my husband when I was going into my senior year of college. So I was really young. I had just turned 21 years old. And we were together for 20 years before I kind of gathered the strength and the courage to leave that marriage. So I went through, my career, graduating college, becoming a mom, then becoming a stay-at-home mom, and then becoming, an active volunteer and a member of my community. I really went through kind of every phase of life, my 20s, my 30s, and my 40s, as a member, as a victim of domestic abuse and a member of society. And so I feel that I can kind of speak to it from so many different perspectives. If you're young and you're in abuse, I understand it. If you're a young working professional, if you're a stay-at-home mom, I just get it. From all of those different angles, I know what it feels like, and it feels terrible. And
I have another question. Did other people know? I mean, did you share it with people, or was it a secret?
Completely a secret. I kept all of this hidden behind the closed doors of my home because I thought I was the only one. And here I was with this prestigious job and a prestigious community, and I was embarrassed and didn't know where to turn for help. I didn't know that organizations like the National Domestic Violence Hotline even existed. And when you're a victim of domestic abuse, I don't know that you necessarily think, and I didn't at the time, but I want everyone else to know, these organizations and organizations like mine exist for you. I always thought they existed for people who were being battered or were in situations of violence. And I didn't understand that domestic abuse was a thing and that it was a real thing that also required help and attention from professionals. That's really important for everyone to understand. If you're in a situation of abuse, that's why the hotline is there. That's why my organizations like the Soda Pop and the Soda Fund, which is a charity to support all of this work, that's why I formed all of this, because everyone is going to need help getting out. And that's why we're all here.
And we think of it as really physical abuse. So you're saying it doesn't even have to be physical abuse.
Not at all. When we talk about 1 in 4 women becoming victims of abuse in her lifetime, that does not mean that any physical abuse will ever occur. Or 50% of women becoming victims of psychological aggression, that doesn't mean anything physical will ever occur. And if you talk about fear and intimidation and control, none of that is physical. And that's so important for people to understand, because domestic abuse, you can't see it. Right? It's something you have to understand exists because you just can't see it.
And people don't speak up. So what are some of the, orange flags, milder signs that you saw along the way?
I would say the first thing that everyone can look out for is it's classic in abuse, is that the abuser tries to isolate you from your family and friends. And what it looks like when you're in a relationship or in dating is, oh, I want to have you all to myself and, just us. I just want to spend time with you because I just want to get to know you, and you're amazing. And it feels passionate and exciting, but what they're doing is pulling you away from your support network and pulling you away from the people that can kind of look from the outside and say, this doesn't look so healthy, or this person doesn't look like a great partner for you. And they're breaking those ties. And that's a great orange flag right there, as you said, because it's one of the first things that they do.
And what else? What other kinds of things do they do?
They start out subtly. I noticed in my case, and I've heard this from so many others, it's little subtle comments that they make, and then they leave them with you. I always say that they kind of plant a seed of doubt, and they leave it to grow in your mind. So it might be a little comment like, you're wearing your hair like that today? Kind of liked it. much better last week, or you got that job or that promotion? How'd you do that? I didn't think you were qualified for that. Or you're wearing those shoes. These little manipulative comments that they drop, rather than what will later turn to overt insults and demeaning, and you can't do anything right, because you will get to that stage later. In the beginning, it's subtle. You're not sure if you were just insulted or what just happened. It's one of those scratch your head moments, like, was I just insulted, or did he like my hair better last weekend? I'm so confused. That's kind of how it starts out. And then you start to sort through it later. And when you look back, you say, oh, no, that was I was being manipulated, but I didn't see it.
Can a woman do at a moment where that happens? Is there something she can say or do to affect it?
I would say the biggest takeaway from all of this is you cannot and will never change an abuser. I would say the first time it happens that you need to go running for the hills and say, I'm with an abuser, I would say open your eyes and start to pay very careful attention. Understand what the 15 warning signs are of domestic abuse. They're posted on my website, which is thesoda-pop.com. They're also posted all over the National Domestic Violence Hotline, which is thehotline.org. Know what those signs are and look for them. And if you start to see a few of those pop up, you need to get out of that situation. And the first thing you need to do is call the hotline, because they will tell you very specifically to your life and your situation how to get out safely. It's not a rote thing where they say, first you do this, then you do this, then you do this. They say, tell me about your life and your circumstances, and we'll make a plan just for you. So that would be my advice for everyone listening. Don't take this on your own. It's bigger than you, and you may not understand that.
Wow. It's really important to understand what you're in. So why don't you talk a little bit, some of the effects, the physical and emotional scars from having endured domestic abuse.
Absolutely. And you'll understand this better, and probably could, I'll explain it as a lay person, because I'm talking to, you know, everyone out there that are my peers. We're not doctors and psychologists. But I think we've all heard of fight or flight, right? So when you get in a situation where you're scared, you either want to fight back and protect yourself, or you want to run away. But when you're in abuse, you can't fight back. And quite often we're trapped with our abusers, right? Because we live with them. We can't flee. So then we're trapped to this third option, which doesn't exist in our wiring. If we can't fight back and we can't run away, but we're trapped, what happens? And that takes an incredible psychological toll on the humans, you know, from head to toe. And what we see from the psychology of that is many and most of us come out with post-traumatic stress disorder. I'm one. We come out with anxiety and depression. That has also happened. For me personally, it started to affect my health. I started to lose, my hair started to fall out. I started to have high blood pressure. I really started to have some health issues because my body didn't know what to do with all of this stress that my life was generating and I couldn't absorb. And it takes a toll. I've been out of abuse almost 7 years, and I still have very classic post-traumatic stress disorder with very classic triggers that I have to watch out for and that I manage to this day.
Well, you also mentioned earlier a lot of court appearances. Did that end 7 years ago, or were you still going through that?
It did not end, and this is something that's very unfortunate for victims of abuse, and I have some advice that I think could save people so much money in court, and that is to try to be prepared as a victim of abuse if you're going to go through a divorce, because abusers don't stop abusing when you leave your marriage. And that's where I was very naive, because I thought, once I got out, okay, I'm out. I just, now I go through the divorce process and I'm done. But when abusers can't reach us any longer in the same room, then they start to look for different ways to abuse us. And one of their favorite ways to do that is to keep dragging us into court. And so for me personally, I spent, once I was divorced, an additional 5 years and $1 million in court just trying to get away from my abuser and to correct some of the things that had gone wrong in the court system the first time during my divorce.
And what I said to you earlier is that at least be grateful that you had that money to spend, even though it was spent. So many women don't have money. So what do they do?
That's absolutely right. So I have two answers for that. One answer is when you call the National Domestic Violence Hotline, they will give you free legal resources in your state. And I think it's most important for everyone to understand. I was fortunate. Now I'm less fortunate. I'm $1 million less fortunate. And that's something that I'll spend, you know, the rest of my life trying to recover from financially. But there are free resources in every single state because legal expenses can be astronomical. And I think that's what keeps a lot of people also in marriages of abuse. They're afraid of how am I going to pay for this divorce? So I want everyone to know that there are free resources available in every single state for every single person. When you call the hotline, they will connect you with those resources. So that's the first answer. But the second answer is I was so disturbed by, you know, my own process and my own circumstances and thinking just about what you just asked me, what would other people do, that I formed this charity, the Soda Fund, and it's the sodafund.org. And one of our main missions is legal advocacy, and it is to go state by state until we've gone through every single state in our country and looked at these laws and started to change them so that it just becomes easier for everyone else when they come through the court system that they don't have the experience that I had. So it's too late for me, but it's not too late for everyone else, and I will spend all of my time doing this until we've changed these laws. They are not set up to support victims of abuse.
No, absolutely not. And a lot of times the abuser is the one who's earning a lot of money. In your case, you did have money, but a lot of times the abuser is the one who has the money. And so he hires the lawyers and everything. It becomes so difficult. So
that's absolutely right. I'm sorry.
Yeah, go on. Go ahead.
I was going to say one of the 15 warning signs of, and a classic, huge one of domestic abuse is that the abuser locks down the money from the victim. And even though I was the only one working in my marriage, my money was still taken away and locked down. So it was very much like I didn't have the money. So I was almost in that same situation as anyone else who would feel like, how am I going to do this? That's how it felt to me as well. I had to use legal resources to get to my own money to protect myself in the court system. So I certainly understand that. That's also a warning sign for people. If you don't have access to your own money, that is a sign of abuse.
So what is the one question that no one should ask a victim of domestic abuse?
Yes. You should never ask a victim of domestic abuse, why did you stay? Or why did you stay so long? Because that's a painful question, and it's a question that we need to answer for ourselves, and we need to figure out when we get to the other side. And when you're in abuse, sometimes it's all you can do just to figure out how you're going to make it through that day. And I had mentioned to you before that we are threatened. We are terrified for our lives or the lives of our children or our pets. And we talked about maybe not having access to financial resources. There are so many reasons why we stay. I've heard Katie Ray Jones, she's the CEO of the National Domestic Violence Hotline. She said it takes an average of 7 times to leave before most people can actually get that energy to propel and move forward and get out. So if people have tried to leave and you're back and you feel stuck, just keep trying. Call the hotline, get a plan, and keep going. It doesn't mean you failed. It just means you didn't make it out yet. And I don't want people to blame themselves, because getting out is the hardest thing that you have to do. Once you're out, it gets so much easier.
Well, you've also worked as a certified divorce coach. So what kind of issues have you found with couples going through divorce?
It's an interesting question, because I've had many couples come in and say, I'm not sure if, my marriage is falling apart because I'm a victim of abuse, or this is just no longer a healthy marriage, or it's just a marriage that we've fallen out of love. And I think a really important distinction to make there is a huge difference between a marriage of abuse and a healthy marriage. And marriages end and fall apart for reasons all the time that we're all very well aware of, for very obvious reasons. People grow apart, or there could be infidelity, or all of those things that we know why marriages end. And sometimes those marriages can be worked on, right, with counseling and support, and you can plug back in and you can fix those marriages. But if you're in a marriage of abuse, that's a whole other breed. It's a whole different animal. When I see those marriages, I immediately direct the abuse victim to a professional therapist and professional resources and say, let those resources guide you. Do not walk back into this marriage until someone has told you it's safe to do that, or you're risking your life. That's a huge difference for people to understand.
Wow. So I would really like you to share some of those red flags. You said there were 15. So
sure.
Share a few more of them.
Sure. So we have insults, demeans, or shames you with put-downs. Or I had said, controls every penny spent in the household, takes your money, or refuses to give you money for necessary expenses, looks at you or acts in ways that scare you, controls who you see, where you go, or what you do, prevents you from making your own decisions, tells you that you are a bad parent, or threatens to harm or take away your children. This is a big one. Prevents you from working or attending school. And I think a few that I didn't get a chance to mention, I'll say quickly, intimidates you with weapons, guns or knives, because that's, violence is right around the corner from that. It's right behind that. Or pressures you to have sex if you're not comfortable in that moment with that, or pressures you to use drugs or alcohol if that's not something that you want to do. So there's a lot going on there.
Wow. So is there any hope for these men? Can they change someone who's been an abuser?
Yeah, I think the answer to that is it's up to anyone who's been an abuser, if they want to change, to go seek help and do the work to change. And then and only then, when a qualified professional has said it's safe for them to go back and be in a relationship, should anyone go near them. It's not up for them to say, or anyone else. I really, really beg people to hear me on this. Work with the professionals if you are in any situation of abuse, and don't take anyone else's word for it, because no one else is an expert. Everyone loves to have an opinion. Work with the professionals and let them tell you when it's safe, because you are risking your life, and sometimes you don't understand that.
And many of these people that are abusers can be very charming in public, and they can also say things very negative about you, like maybe call you a woman's libber or put you down to other people so that other people around you don't think as highly of you. Have you had that kind of experience?
Absolutely. My ex-husband was a classic narcissist, so he in public looked like the life of the party, amazing personality, so charming, super good looking. He's the one that walked in and just people would gravitate toward him. And I was maybe a little bit more laid back and a little bit more on the quiet side. And so when I left the marriage and finally got out, it was very easy for him to tell everyone else, she went crazy, she's lost her mind, she's made this whole thing up. And people started to kind of wonder, well, who's telling the truth? And that's also something that abusers do all the time. They flip the story on the victim, and the victims are so exhausted from being abused that we don't even have the words to articulate to people what the heck just happened here. And so we look confused and disoriented, and like maybe we're not telling the truth. But we are, but we're just beaten down. And so there's a lot that goes on there. And so people can work with the professionals before they leave and say, how do I make the plan and what might happen? They're going to do a lot better than trying to leave on their own. And that was a huge mistake I made. And so I beg people, don't be me. Don't make the mistakes that I made, because I learned from them the hard way. And I'm trying to save everyone else all of that heartache and money and pain and time and effort and all of the work I had to do to undo all of the problems that happened.
Yeah, another problem that I see in these situations is that you, the victim, believe in the goodness of people. So it's hard for you to even believe that this is really happening. And you think, maybe I did something wrong. Did you have that happen?
Absolutely. I am an inherent people pleaser. And I think a lot of us are. So I kind of feel like my goal in life is to make everyone else happy and make sure everyone else is happy and everyone else feels good. And I come last. And I've always been that way. And when you're that way, you're always looking for the good in everyone else and knowing I can make them happy. And they're good people. And especially when you come from a home, you know, that's filled with love and a great family, you're not looking for warning signs or dark side of anyone else. And you forget to look out for yourself. You forget to have your own back. It's a lesson that you have to learn at some point in your life. Don't put yourself last, because you'll pay for it. No one else is going to have your back if you don't have your own back first.
Wow, that's an important message for an awful lot of women, because we're so used to taking care of a family. A lot of women do that, but they're not always in an abusive relationship. Sometimes the man is loving and supports them.
But it is, I agree with you, it is a universal truth. I hear, you know, it's the old oxygen mask, right, example. And they talk to you, just even to moms, how we can exhaust ourselves just taking care of our families and our children and putting everyone else first. But we have to wake up the next day and still be there for everyone. And if we've depleted our own energy to the point where we can't be a good mom the next day, or a good sister, daughter, wife, spouse, partner, significant other, wherever we are in our lives, then we've cheated ourselves. And so we really do need to do a better job of looking out for ourselves.
So tell us about your website, sodapop.com, just, you know, lay it out, and what people can expect there, and how, and anything else you want to share to help people, and your book.
Thank you. So the Soda Pop is the soda-pop.com. And when you come there, it's there for two, you know, really solid reasons. It's there to give you help if you're a victim. It'll point you directly to the resources at the National Domestic Violence Hotline. So you can come to my site, thesoda-pop.com, and click on Get Help, or you can learn about the warning signs. You can also read my own stories of abuse, domestic abuse, so that you can see how it looked in my life and see if it looks like that in your life. And then it's also a community for those of us who are survivors now to find one another and unite and know that we're not alone and we can heal on the other side. And I'm launching some new projects and initiatives to celebrate our lives on the other side, because we've got to come through this and acknowledge that we can have a really great life on the other side, and that's okay. My book, Sparks in Love, is available on Amazon.com, and it talks about the 15 warning signs of domestic abuse, but it tells my story from the time I walked in until the time I walked out. And so it's both a cautionary tale to try to educate and inform people so they don't become me, but it's also all of the details of what I went through. It was hard to put them on paper, but I really wanted people to learn from my experience.
And what led you to write about this?
I was looking for a book about domestic abuse when I left my marriage that would show me a survivor's story and make me feel better about my own. And, you know, I was just looking for a memoir, someone that had been through it that I could say, okay, they did it, they made it, they're okay now. How did they do it? And I couldn't find one that I could identify with. I couldn't really find something that felt universal to all of us. And so as a journalist and a writer, I said, okay, I guess I'm going to write mine. I mean, that's just kind of what happened.
So it's incredible, you know, because it's right before our eyes, and we have no idea who is going through this kind of abuse. Because, as you said, people keep quiet about it. They're embarrassed.
It's absolutely true. And if you think about the statistic, it's 1 in 4 women. So if you look at a long line of people standing in line at Starbucks, count off every 4. It's 1 in 4. It's 1 in 4 people sitting at a table for 4 in a restaurant. That's what we're looking at. It's not random or maybe. It is a fact. It's a proven statistic. It's everywhere. It could be your best friend. It could be your sister's best friend. It's that close. If it's not you, it's someone you know. It's that close to all of our homes.
You know, it's so interesting because in politics right now at this point, we have so many women running for office. So I believe a lot of this is going to change because some of those women have been through this and they're not sharing it yet.
I agree with that. And I really do feel like this is the time for change. I feel that the more that we raise the volume on this conversation about domestic abuse and tell people that it's okay to talk about it, there's no shame in it. There are so many of us and so many of us that are bright and strong and vibrant, like you said before, and educated and not afraid to turn our lives around because we know that we can. When we start to realize the power that we have, I think we're going to find one another more quickly and unify, and we will talk about it more easily. I absolutely agree. And that's what I'm trying so hard to do, is come out as that voice and have people find me and say, okay, if she'll talk about it, then I will too. I'll go find her. I'm all over social media. People can find me on Facebook, at Sparks and Love, at Susan Sparks Soda. Come find me. I'm everywhere. I'm accessible. I actually will talk to people on Messenger. I want people to comment. I'll answer comments because the whole point of this is we do need to have a dialogue. This isn't just me talking out at everyone. We all need to have a dialogue about this and unite because there's going to be power in all of us coming together.
And what happens with change is it really only takes one person who's dedicated to start the movement for change. And you're certainly doing that.
So thank you so much.
I keep cutting you off. Before we end, please just share final words for our listeners.
I was going to say, I truly hope that you're right, that one person can inspire change. That's my mission. And I want everyone who's listening to know that you're not alone. You can definitely make it out of this situation. I am no different than you are. I was as terrified and felt as trapped as you do, and I understand. And you can talk to the hotline through chat or via telephone. Just go to a safe place and do it because you can be monitored. And you want to make sure that you're not being watched when you reach out for help. But do reach out for help, please.
Well, Susan Sparks, thank you so much for all that you're doing to help people to survive domestic abuse and create a wonderful life after that.
Dr. Goodson, thank you so much for having me on your show. This has been an incredible experience, and I really thank you for letting me share all of this information with all of your listeners today.
I'm so happy to do that. Thank you. And to those of you listening, please visit my website, drericagoodstone.com. You can request a Healing Through Love free session and check out the upcoming events and webinars or whatever else is happening. There's lots of videos there too. Look forward to speaking to you again soon. Bye for now.